Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, or about social justice, or about Christianity. Today, my visitor is Pat McCarthy. Pat, a warm welcome to our radio program.
Thank you, Beate.
Pat was the founding editor of the national Catholic newspaper, New Zealand Catholic. When he retired from NZ Catholic, he began leading pilgrimages to the Holy Land. His seventh pilgrimage will be this year in September and in October. Pat has also developed a website describing more than 100 sacred sites in Israel and the Palestinian territories, Jordan and Egypt. Pat, you have led six pilgrimages to the Holy Land, and you are planning to lead another one later this year. What was the reason for starting to lead pilgrimages?
Well, I must confess that the Holy Land wasn't really high on my list of countries I would like to visit. And then in 1996, a friend of mine was organizing a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, so I decided to go along. I was perhaps influenced by the fact that my friend and his wife and I were then going to do some travel in Europe, and I thought that would be more interesting. But the Holy Land I found absolutely fascinating. It's a wonderful place to go to, a place where Jesus walked, where he taught, where he performed miracles, and of course where he died and where he rose again. And once I had been there, I really wanted to come back again because it's such an important place for a Christian to visit. So several years after that, when I was planning my retirement from NZ Catholic, I happened to come across some articles by the editor of the Catholic paper in South Africa, who was describing leading a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. So I thought, if he could do that, so could I. And that's how it began. Since then, my wife Susie and I have taken about 200 people to the Holy Land, and they have all found it a wonderful experience. And I should mention that none of them has ever said that they have felt unsafe at any time during our pilgrimages.
200 people, so you have huge groups. Or are they coming peu à peu?
From all around the country, yes. I've got two reasons for encouraging people to go to the Holy Land. One is because it's such a spiritual experience. There's a real spiritual benefit to be in these holy places. And the second is to show solidarity with the declining Christian population in the Holy Land. The numbers have been falling over many years now. In Israel and the Palestinian territories, only 2% of the population is Christian. There have been economic and political pressures that have forced many, thousands and thousands, to emigrate. In fact, there are more people from Christ's birthplace, more Christians from Christ's birthplace of Bethlehem, who are living in San Diego, Chile, than there are left in Bethlehem.
Yeah, that's the declining Christianity, or the declining number of Christians is, it's not only in the Holy Land, but the whole region is losing
yes,
the Christians.
That's right, yes.
Yes. And so you already mentioned Holy Land is not a state.
It's not a state, no. I look on it as all of the places that are mentioned in the Bible, and especially in the New Testament is for Christians, because that is of most importance. So we've got Israel and the Palestinian territories, or West Bank, Jordan, Egypt, and Syria. A few years ago we had planned a visit to Syria, but unfortunately the war broke out and we had to cancel it.
And when you are in the Holy Land, do you have chances to speak to the Christians who are living there?
Oh, yes, we do. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That must be also very enriching.
Oh, it is. Yes. Yes. They're wonderful people. Those who have kept faith for all these years. Some of them, their ancestors probably were in the crowds that Jesus preached to. The events of the Bible happened in their backyard, and that's why it's such a wonderful place to visit.
And on your website, you're describing more than 100 different places, sacred sites. Have you visited all of them?
I visited more than 90 of them, certainly all of the major ones, and a lot of them on several occasions. We just keep going back there because they're so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When I started off in, I think it was 2008, I started researching for the website. I thought I would need to cover about 45 different sites. In fact, I've now got 40 in Jerusalem alone, and the rest spread out through Israel, Palestinian territories, and Jordan, two in Egypt. But unfortunately, we haven't got to Damascus yet.
Mm. A long history, lots of places to visit. Mm. For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or send me an email at muffintalk840@gmail.com. My visitor today is Pat McCarthy. He is the founding editor of New Zealand Catholic and has been leading pilgrimages to the Holy Land for several years. He was telling us about the two main points why he goes to the Holy Land, because it's a spiritual experience and because he wants to show solidarity with the Christians who are remaining in this original area of Christianity. Mm-hmm. Pat, a few weeks ago you wrote an article in The Catholic with the title, "New Discoveries Are Still Made in the Holy Land." What discoveries were you referring to?
Well, discoveries are being made all the time. Sometimes it's an archaeologist with his trowel or her trowel, and sometimes it's a bulldozer that happens to turn up a mosaic floor while building a road. And all these things are investigated by the Israeli Antiquities Authority to see whether they are of value or not. Anyway, I'll tell you about three. The first time I went to the Holy Land in 1996, our guide showed us a little narrow pool which for centuries had been identified as the Pool of Siloam. That's the place where Jesus healed a man who was blind. 8 years after that, a drainage repair crew was working in the area on pipe maintenance. They uncovered steps leading down to the real Pool of Siloam, which had been hidden for about 1900 years, since the Romans destroyed Jerusalem in AD 90. A second example, there's a site in Jordan, the place where John the Baptist baptized Jesus. Now, the first time I went to Jordan, we couldn't visit that because it was a minefield. It was on the border between Israel and Jordan. Peace did not exist between the two countries. It does now, and the minefield was then cleared, and archaeologists got to work in the area. They've discovered the remains of more than 20 Christian sites in this one area. There are several churches, there's a walled monastery, there are baptismal pools, and there's a sophisticated water reticulation system. And Jordan, although it's a Muslim country, recognizes the importance of this place as a tourist attraction, and the royal family has given land to Christian denominations to build churches there. Several have already been built. The Catholic Church was nearly finished when we visited last year. Another place of discovery is at Nazareth. There's a new pilgrimage venture called the International Mary of Nazareth Center. And it's a French initiative, and it uses multimedia techniques to depict the Virgin Mary's place in salvation history. Now, when this place was being prepared, workers were digging up an old courtyard, and they uncovered the walls of an ancient house. The Israeli Antiquities Authority experts had to be called in.
What do you call an ancient house? Maybe ancient we have to house. Say that
well,
to
this
the
visitors. The experts said dates from the time of Jesus.
So about 2,000 years old.
Yes, that's right. They described it as the first residential building yet uncovered in Nazareth from the time of Jesus. So this is a house that was there in a small village. Nazareth at the time would have had perhaps 100 houses. So this is a place that Jesus would have known. He probably visited the place. He probably, as a child, played with the children from that house. So it makes it, I think, a very important place.
Mm-hmm. So we're going back into the history, and I think that this relationship, you might still feel that present.
Oh, yes,
even
yes,
after
of
2,000
course.
Years.
Yes, yes. That's right.
And, well, Jesus lived more than 2,000 years ago, and there were no videos and photos taken. How do we know that these sites were really the ones that people believe in they are?
Mm-hmm. Okay, no videos, no photos, not even Facebook. but people in the time of Christ had very good memories. We know that whole genealogies and histories were transmitted by the oral tradition. It's something that's been lost today. And I can easily imagine the shepherds of Bethlehem showing their grandchildren this cave where the baby was born. And it was a cave, not a stable, as we have on the Christmas cards. And the disciples who had followed Jesus would have passed on the information about places to succeeding generations. And these disciples, of course, included members of Jesus' own family. For example, James, who was described as the brother of the Lord, was the first bishop of Jerusalem. And we can think of a New Zealand comparison. In 1838, Bishop Pompalia arrived in the Hokianga and said the first mass in New Zealand at Totara Point. Well, that's a fairly remote site, but it is well marked and it is remembered, and it's a place of pilgrimage. And I'm sure it will still be marked in 100 years' time, and maybe in 2,000 years' time, as long as there are Catholics around to remember it. So this is how the tradition builds surrounding the holy places in the Holy Land. And there are three crucial places in the Holy Land where the Roman Emperor Hadrian ensured that the places were marked. These are the place where...
So they were marked really close to that history.
They were really marked, yes.
Yeah.
In AD 70, Hadrian erected pagan shrines over the places where Jesus was crucified, and where he was buried, and also where he was born in Bethlehem. What Hadrian was trying to do was to replace the tradition of Christian worship at these places. But ironically, what he did was to preserve the locations for future generations. So 200 years later, when the Emperor Constantine allowed Christianity to flourish, these places were well marked, and the pagan shrines could be removed, and the places excavated so that they were as they were in the time of Jesus. So we can be pretty sure about the location of the place of the crucifixion, the place of the resurrection, the place where Jesus was born. And there are quite a few other sites that can be relied on as being authentic. These are places mentioned in the Gospels and in the traditions of the early Christian Church. They have the support of archaeology, of literary sources, and of early pilgrims' accounts, because pilgrims began visiting the Holy Land in the early centuries. These places include Nazareth, where the Annunciation took place, Capernaum, the town on the Sea of Galilee, which Jesus made his hometown, Jacob's Well, where Jesus met the Samaritan woman, the tomb of Lazarus at Bethany, Gethsemane, where Jesus suffered his agony, the tomb of Mary at the foot of the Mount of Olives, that's where Mary was buried, and the location of the room of the Last Supper on Mount Zion, although that building was reconstructed by the Crusaders 1,000 years ago, so it's quite different from what the original building would have been. And some places, unfortunately, have completely disappeared. We can't visit them. One I feel very sad about is Emmaus. There's a lovely story in Luke's Gospel about the two disciples who met Jesus on the road to Emmaus, and their hearts burned within them as he unfolded the meaning of the Gospel, of the Scriptures to them. But the real Emmaus is lost to us. There are three different sites where there are churches, in some cases more than one church, and there are religious communities, and people visit those and remember the story. But the scholars believe that the real Emmaus is somewhere different. It's in a place called Motza, which is a Jewish suburb on the outskirts of Jerusalem. Susie and I spent several hours one day in a taxi driving around the place, trying to find where excavations had been done several years ago, but we weren't able to find anything.
Do you think it is just covered, or is it?
Yes, it's just covered. There is somewhere where there is a bit of an excavation, and the Roman road is visible, but we weren't able to find that. So what it is now is just totally built over. So the village has gone, which is really unfortunate, I think, because it's such a lovely episode in the Gospels. But we can go to three other sites where the episode is remembered. So that's next best, I suppose.
So when you go on the pilgrimages, you go from one place to another, and then you talk about where in the Bible this place was mentioned, and then you reflect on it. Yes. And is that how you go on the pilgrimage?
Yes, we have a gospel reading relating to the site. It depends on what it is. If it's say Shepherd's Field, just outside Bethlehem, where traditionally this is the site that the angels appeared to shepherds. We might have Mass in one of the caves in that area, and we end up singing Christmas carols. So what we do relates to the site.
Yeah. Mm. And recently a new discovery has been made in Magdala. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us more about this?
Yes. Magdala is the hometown of Mary Magdalene. Now, she was a disciple of Christ and the first recorded witness of the resurrection. She also has a reputation of being a reformed prostitute, but that's not correct. That came about because Pope Gregory the Great, back in the at the end of the 6th century, gave a sermon in which he confused her with the penitent prostitute who anointed Jesus' feet with ointment. But Pope Gregory got it wrong. They were different people. Anyway, Magdala is a city beside the Sea of Galilee. And in the 1960s, Franciscan archaeologists got to work there, and they uncovered an ancient port and the grid of city streets. So they left, and nothing was done there for quite a number of years. Pilgrimage bus used to go past there, and it just looked like a derelict site with nothing worth looking at. One year after the pilgrimage, Susie and I got a rental car and drove around Galilee, and we called in there, but really there wasn't anything worth looking at. Then the Legionnaires of Christ bought a property next door to the Franciscans. They wanted to establish a church and a hotel for tourists and an institute for women and a retreat center. And when they were preparing to build in 2009, archaeological remains were found. The priest in charge says he prayed that they wouldn't find anything because that would have delayed the construction of the whole project. But he also prayed that if they found anything, it would be something important. So they found something that was very important. They uncovered the remains of an ancient synagogue from the first century. In it was a stone block with carvings on it, including a carving of a menorah. That's the seven-branched lampstand or candlestick that was used in the temple. Now, the Gospels of Matthew and Mark say that Jesus preached in synagogues throughout Galilee. And this was only 10 kilometers away from Capernaum, where Jesus established himself, established his ministry, really. That was his headquarters. So I think we can say for sure that he would have preached in the synagogue. And the synagogue has attracted a lot of attention from the Israelis, because having an ancient synagogue is very important to the Jewish faith as well. Last year, the Legionnaires opened their new church at Magdala, and we visited it. It has a simple design with mosaics and murals that focus especially on the women in the Bible. The altar is very interesting. It's in the shape of a first century fishing boat. And immediately behind it is an infinity pool and then the Sea of Galilee. So it's a wonderful setting. And the new church the Legionnaires built also has an ecumenical chapel. And that's very important, I think, because most of the churches in the Holy Land belong to either the Catholics or to the Greek Orthodox. So there's nowhere in most of these sites for people of other denominations to worship. But here is somewhere they can worship, right beside the Sea of Galilee.
Indeed. The Catholics, are they Syro-Malabar Catholics or Roman Catholics?
They're Latin Catholics, Roman Catholics, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're called Latins in the Holy Land.
Oh.
Yes. Uh-huh. So they're Roman Catholics. But there are also Armenian Catholics. There are Catholics from Lebanon. There are Catholics from Egypt, the Coptics. So there are quite a number of Catholics, but the most of them are Latin Catholics.
Mm. Yeah, that's still some kind of Latin influence.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, thank you very much, Pat, for these explanations. It's really interesting. So when are you going to the Holy Land this year?
We go in September and October for 20 days.
And you put your information on your website. Would you like to mention your website?
The website is www.seetheholyland.net.
Good. Thank you very much. And to our listeners, what is coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center? On Wednesday, 3rd of June, Sister Catherine Wiles Pickard will give a talk about journeying with a separated and divorced from 10 a.m. to noon. This talk would focus on the challenges that divorce or separations bear and help to understand what sacramental marriage means. On Saturday, 6th of June, Margaret Bowater offers a seminar on visionary and lucid dreams. Come along and bring a big dream of yours if you have one. Saturday, 6th of June, 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And on the 13th of June, we are going to have Sister Gemma Simmons at our center. Sister Gemma is from the United Kingdom, and she's here for a visit to the schools and is going to facilitate a retreat day on the topic, Mary Misunderstood? Saturday, 13th of June, from 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. in our center. And for all events at our center, please register with us at 09 for Auckland, 638-6238. Or you can register through our website, www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. For any further questions on these events or feedback on our Muffin Talks, please send me an email at muffintalk840@gmail.com. For any of these events, please always register. And I wish you a blessed week, a good Friday and a blessed week ahead. And I hope that you tune in again next week. Thank you.